Ladies, we are studying Parashat Balak, which is the Parashat HaShavua. Matovu Ohalecha Yaakov, Mishkenotecha Yisrael. How goodly are your tents, O Jacob, your dwelling places, O Israel. Of course, this statement was said by one of the greatest anti-Semites that was bent on our destruction. Turns out he says one of the nicest things about our people. The anti-Semite, of course, is Bil'am. While he intended to curse us, he ends up saying something that has become so central in the Jewish literature that many of the sidurim that people use, the sidur begins with this phrase, Matovu Ohalecha Yaakov, Mishkenotecha Yisrael. Bil'am was impressed. He was impressed by two things. And although Bil'am was a wicked man, we cannot take it away that he was a prophet. What he said was prophecy. What he said was a great revelation. We cannot discount his words. The words actually are coming from God through Bil'am's mouth. What does he say? He talks about two things which is probably the key to the survival of the Jewish people. It's ironic. He came to kill us and destroy us, and he ends up giving us the secret to what makes us live. He talks about the Ohel, Ohel Yaakov, the tents of Jacob, and he then talks about Mishkenotecha Yisrael. Mishkenotecha would mean the dwelling places. Our rabbis tell us that Bil'am was referring to two different institutions, both integrally important, and as we'll see today, both are clearly connected. Ohel Yaakov refers to the Jewish home, the tents in which the Jewish people live and build their families. That's the Ohel Yaakov, the tents of Jacob. Of course, in the olden days, they lived in tents. If Bil'am was giving the same speech today, he probably would say, the homes of Jacob. In those days, the homes were Ohalim. He then refers to Mishkenotecha Yisrael. Our rabbis tell us that the word Mishkenotecha comes from the Hebrew word Mishkan. Mishkan represents the synagogues, the places where the Shekhinah rests. As a matter of fact, the first tabernacle was called Mishkan. It's referring to the temple, the Beit HaMikdash. So Bil'am says that the two institutions that are integral, that deserve a compliment, Matovu, is the Jewish home and the Jewish temple. The question that I had over this past week was, why does Bil'am put both of these in the same pasuk? Granted, they're both homes. One is the home of the Jewish family, and one is the home of God. But clearly they're not the same. If Bil'am wanted to praise the Jewish home, he should have praised them in one pasuk, and then in a separate pasuk, referred to the Jewish temple. But for some reason, he made a connection between them. As all of you know already, when we study the Torah, we like to study the Pesukim in context of each other. Why are they next to each other? That's called Simuchim. When two concepts are placed next to each other, we have an obligation to try to figure out a connection between the two. We don't believe it's just random, that the Torah just writes facts, and they happen to land wherever they land, but there's no connection between A and B. It's not the case. It's our obligation to find connections. Well, today, I'd like to say a chiddush. As most of you know already, last Sunday night, we had a hatuna, a wedding. My son got married, Baruch Hashem. Mazal tov, b'siman tov. So we're still in the week of the Sheva Berachot. I think it's very appropriate then to speak about the Jewish home, and I don't believe that it's a coincidence that during the week of Sheva Berachot, we're given an opportunity to not only say a chidush on the Jewish home, but it's the Parashat HaShavua. Shlomo HaMelech said, Davar be'ito matov, that when things come out in the right time, it's a good thing. We would probably talk about this pasuk no matter when my son would have gotten married. That's the pasuk you talk about when kids get married. Matovu alecha Yaakov. Our custom is at our weddings, we sing this pasuk. The Hazan, as he marches down, he sings Matovu alecha Yaakov. That's the way we introduce the groom and the bride. So we would have probably spoken this derasha even if it landed in Parashat Noah. So the good news is that we're able to now speak timely events in its proper time, as I mentioned. What is the connection between the Jewish home and the Mishkan and the temple? Furthermore, there is a famous Gemara. It's in Berachot. It's on page 6. There the Gemara says, "Amesameya hatan v'kala ki ilu bana achat mechurbot Yerushalayim." Anybody, if ever they went to a wedding and they had the chance to make the hatan v'kala happy, how would you do that? Well, some people dance in front of the hatan v'kala, and some of them say to the hatan v'kala nice words of encouragement. Probably the most effective way to be mesameh hatan v'kala is to give them a gift. But nonetheless, everybody who's involved in this mitzvah, in whichever way they decide to perform it, that's called simchat hatan v'kala. The Gemara says no. That when you leave the wedding, you're going to receive credit. Credit for what? Ki ilu bana achat mechurbot Yerushalayim. And if you built one of the ruins of Jerusalem, if I had to guess, Jerusalem was a glorious city. It had a lot of homes. Those homes were destroyed many times over. Those are Churbot Yerushalayim. So you get credit as if you built one of these ruins. I'm not too sure why that's such a good thing. Why would you want to build the ruins? It should say, you make Hatan Mekala happy, it's like you're building a new home. You're building a new abode, a new condominium. What does it mean? Achat mechurbot Yerushalayim. In order to understand this, I think there is a very fundamental Ramban. The Ramban is at the end of, is the beginning of Sefer Shemot. The book of Shemot primarily talks about the building of the Mishkan. Parashiyot, Teruma, Tetzaveh, Vayakel, Pekudeh. Four parashiyot at least talk about its construction. And therefore Sefer Shemot in his introduction, the Ramban writes that the purpose of the building of the Mishkan is as the Pasuk says, Va'asu li mikdash v'shakanti betocham. The purpose of building the Mishkan was to bring the Shekhinah down to earth. It seems after the sin of the golden calf, the Shekhinah left. The Shekhinah went back up. You needed to build this structure with all its details and technicalities in order that the Shekhinah would come rest down again in this abode and then rest in the people's hearts. As the Pasuk says, Betocham, not Betocho, that the Shekhinah will rest amongst all the Jewish people. The Ramban writes, the homes of the Avot. Abraham was married to Sarah. Yitzhak was married to Rivka. And Yaakov Abinu, of course, with his four wives. And he says something amazing. He says the Shekhinah also was in the homes of the Avot. And the Mishkan was only a replica of the energy of the Shekhinah that was in the Mishkan. That means the Mishkan was only secondary to the homes of the Avot. That means after the homes of the Avot were destroyed, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, they didn't live forever, Sefer Bereshit is finished, so now we wanted to replicate the homes of the Avot. We wanted to have a zecher, a commemoration of these Avot, of what their homes looked like. So when you went to the Mishkan, you were sensing a small sense of what the house of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov was. So therefore their homes actually were temples. They were places that had tremendous, tremendous concentration of Shekhinah. And the Mishkan is a duplicate. It's a replication. Which means they say, we want to rebuild Avraham Avinu's house. How are you going to do it? Oh, now you need a menorah, and you need a shulchan, and you need all sorts of furnishings. And when the Shekhinah came down, it still wasn't the same. It was a consolation against their homes. So whereas there's a connection between the book of Bereshit and the book of Shemot, the book of Bereshit talks about the Mishkan of the Jewish home. Sefer Shemot talks about the physical structure of the Mishkan of God. Both, however, have the same result. V'shachati betokam, that the Shekhinah rested in that dwelling. There's a sefer called Shem Mishmuel. He makes the following observation. You must have heard of the Gemara that says, Rashi brings it down, when Yitzhak Avinu brought Rivka into his mother's tent, he was consoled. What could have happened? What could have consoled Yitzhak? The Gemara writes that in Sarah Imenu's tent, there were three weekly miracles that took place. Actually, one of them was a daily miracle. What was it? Number one, she would light the Nerot on Friday, Nerot Shabbat, and they would last the whole entire week. We make a big deal of Nes Hanukkah. You know, they found a little oil, and it lasted for 8 days. This was child's play to what happened in the homes of the Avot. They would light the candles on Friday with the same amount of oil, and they would have to blow it out on the next Friday to relight them again. They would last for a week. Now clearly that's a miracle. When Sarah Imenu died, the candles went out. In the homes of the Avot, they would bake bread. Like every Jewish home is always baking halot. In the home of Sarah Imenu, the bread never spoiled. It remained fresh and hot the entire week. Now, the fact that it remains hot is clearly a miracle. How could it remain hot? It wasn't put on a mechanism. It wasn't put on a hot plate. It wasn't placed on a burner. Furthermore, the fact that it doesn't spoil. Take bread today that doesn't have preservatives. Today they have bread with preservatives. I didn't buy it, but I guess I had a package of wraps. You know what the wraps are?
Yeah.
And as you know, I go away for the summer. I came home at the end of the summer, and the bag of wraps is still there, and it's still soft and fresh. That explained to me that there must be more in that wraps besides flour and water. And then you look at the ingredients, you say, oh, there's more ingredients in the wraps than there is in the shampoo. There's all things in there. What is in the wraps? All those are preservatives, so they'll last forever. It cannot be too healthy. In Avraham Avinu's house, when they made wraps, they didn't have any preservatives. Take a piece of bread and leave it on the counter. After a few hours, it already becomes hard. A few days later, it grows mold. This is what happens. In Avraham Avinu's house, there's bread that stays fresh from week to week. The third miracle that took place, it says that there was a cloud of glory on his house. That means when you walk by the tent of Avraham, you saw a certain presence. I can't tell you exactly what it looked like. It doesn't mean there was a cloud. There's clouds outside today. it was a certain cloud where you knew that this was some sort of presence of God. This, like that. Like that, a little like that. That's just an example. That's an example. That's an example. Okay. God is with us for sure. That's for sure. Anyway, the point is, the Shekhinah, you saw it on top of the tent of Avraham Avinu. Of course, when Sarah Emenu died, the bread got stale, and the cloud moved away. When Yitzhak brought his new wife into his mother's tent, I guess that's where they lived. All of a sudden, the candles went back on. All of a sudden, the cloud of glory came back, and the bread, all of a sudden, became fresh. At that point, Yitzhak Abinu was consoled, not only on his mother, but he was consoled that he picked the right wife. That obviously his wife was on the same standard that these miracles were able to happen. Now, it happened the third time when Yaakov Abinu got married as well. And now we go to Sefer Shemot. In Sefer Shemot, we're building the Mishkan. Look at the parallels between the house of the Avot and the Mishkan. They would light the menorah in the Mishkan. Well, it's true, the menorah did not last from week to week. That's true. However, there was a certain candle that was called Ner HaMa'aravi. The Ner HaMa'aravi, according to some opinions, was the center Ner. Like here, we'd be the center one. They would put the same amount of oil in the center Ner as they would all the others. Every morning when the Kohen would come back, all of the other Nerot extinguished, and the center Ner would still be lit. And they would use the center Ner to light the other candles, or the other wicks. And that's a miracle. You cannot explain that scientifically. Why does the center Ner never go out? So that's already a duplication of what happened in the tent of the Avot. In Sarah's case, it happened more. Both of them stayed. In the Beit HaMikdash, they used to have bread. It was called Lechem HaPanim, showbread. The showbread had to be placed on a table. And it would sit on the table for 1 week. At the end of the week, the shift of Kohanim would change. Every week there was a new shift of Kohanim. They wanted to give everybody a chance. So as the Kohanim would leave their shift on Shabbat, and the new shift would come in, they would divide the bread. They would give them bread, and then they would put new bread on the table. The bread would sit on the table for 1 week, and then it would be divvied out. Of course, you would imagine, who would want 1 week old bread? We would say it would be a better idea to bake the bread, give it out immediately. But the Hachamim tell us that when they gave out the bread 1 week later, not only was it still fresh, but it was still hot, like they just took it out of the oven. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. Exactly what happened in the homes of the Avot. The bread never spoiled. Thirdly, of course in the Mishkan, you saw the presence of God. There was a cloud of God, an anan of Shekhinah, his presence that rested over the Mishkan. So everybody gets excited when you hear that in the Mishkan, but you have to know that our forefathers lived like this. They lived with these daily and weekly miracles on a constant basis. So clearly there's a correlation between Mishkan and the Jewish home. If the Jewish home is established correctly, so it's possible to have the same presence as the temple. If that's the case, I'd like to say a chiddush. When it says in the Gemara, "Kol ha-mesameya hatan v'kala," that when you make a hatan v'kala happy, it's like you built a hat mechorbot, one of the ruins. What do you think that means, one of the ruins? It should say, it's like you built a ruin. A hat refers to something specific. If I say one of these means a specific one, not any one. when you're mesameach hatan mekala, it's not you're building any one of the ruins. It's as if you're building a hat mechorbot. A hat means the specific one, the special one. And what, in your opinion, would be the most special ruin of Jerusalem? The Beit HaMikdash. The temple. The temple was also a ruin. That means when you're building a Jewish home, it's tantamount to building a temple. Ahat mechorbot. Why? Because if the Jewish home is built correctly, and it's built according to the proper traditions and ingredients, so that's considered a miniature Beit HaMikdash. It has the same correlation. Keep in mind, there was a rabbi that was called Rav Levi Yitzchak Mibarditchev. He writes in one of his sefarim the following, which is a chidush. He says, it's in a sefer called Pitkamin Kadishin. Ki atidin batei Yisrael, sheyilku le'eretz Yisrael, bizman bi'at Mashiach b'mera b'yamin. He says that everybody knows what the Gemara says in Megillah, that all the synagogues are going to be uprooted from wherever they might be, and they're going to be replanted in Jerusalem, or not Jerusalem, in Eretz Yisrael. It means the synagogue that we're sitting in today. Its location is temporary. This synagogue that's on East 9th Street and Avenue S in Brooklyn, New York, in the zip code 11223, is only its temporary location. At a certain point, when Mashiach comes, the synagogue will be uprooted and will be replanted somewhere in Eretz Yisrael. That's a Gemara. Not only the synagogue, but all traditional synagogues throughout the world are going to find a place in Eretz Yisrael. So it's going to be, I don't know, thousands and thousands of Bate Knesiyot. That's why it's a good investment to invest in a synagogue. Because it's gonna last forever. Don't think, the person will say, why should I invest in the synagogue? Mashiach's coming. What are we going to do with all these synagogues? The synagogue is coming with you. Said Rav Levi Yitzchak Mibarditchev, although there's no Gemara on this, he says that the homes of the Jewish people, the homes also are going to be uprooted and going to go to Eretz Yisrael, where the Jewish people lived in the exile, are going to be brought to Eretz Yisrael. So they asked Rav Levi Yitzchak Mibarditchev, how do you know this? There's no Gemara on this. So he writes, Kal vachomer bebate kenesiyot. It's a Kal vachomer. You know what a Kal vachomer is? Kal vachomer means, if the synagogues are going to move, certainly the Jewish homes. Why certainly? If you would ask me, what's holier, a synagogue or a Jewish home? I would say a synagogue. I would say the synagogue is going to go to Eretz Yisrael, but the Jewish home? So he writes, Uma bate kenesiyot she'ikaram rak lekriyat shema v'netfilah. The synagogue is designated for prayer at certain times during the day and to reciting the Shema in the morning and in the evening. So he writes, Batei Yisrael, the homes of Israel, sheyesh bem harbe mitzvot deoraita. The Jewish homes has many mitzvot. First of all, we have a mezuzah. The Bet Knesset does not need a mezuzah. In the Bet Bayit Yudi, we have Birkat HaMazon, which is a mitzvah from the Torah. We have Torah, we have Tzedakah, we have Gemilut Hasadim, we have teaching our children, which is a mitzvah from the Torah. There's more mitzvot, he says, from the Torah that are fulfilled in a Jewish home than are done in the Beit Knesset. Keep in mind, according to many opinions, the obligation to pray is only rabbinical. So the mitzvot that are done in the synagogue are mainly rabbinical mitzvot. But the mitzvot, he says, that we do in the Jewish home are primarily mitzvot from the Torah. So if in a place where you do rabbinical mitzvot, that Beit Knesset ends up in Eretz Yisrael, certainly the Jewish home is even greater. So that already indicates to us that Hachamim, when they look to the Jewish home, they always draw a parallel line to the Beit Knesset, or to the Beit Midrash, or to the Beit HaMikdash, or to the Mishkan. They saw that these two homes were closely related. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot, Yehi betcha bet va'ad l'chachamim. What does that mean? The rabbis were telling us how to build Jewish homes. And they said, Yehi betcha, your house, should be bet va'ad. What does bet va'ad mean? Bet va'ad means a place where people come and congregate. A bet va'ad. Now, we know what we call a place where people come and congregate. It's the congregation. It's the shul. So basically what the Mishnah is telling you, if we're reading it correctly, Yehi betcha bet va'ad. That the Mishnah is telling you that you have to turn your betcha into a bet va'ad. Which means, if it has the proper ingredients of spirituality, then there is no difference between bet va'ad and betcha. It is the same. And according to everything that Yitzhak Meberdichev, the Jewish home is actually greater. Because it's done more on a constant basis, and the mitzvot that are done there are on a higher level than those that are even done in the Bet Knesset. Oh. If that's the case, so then I go back to what I began. I understand what Bil'am was saying. When Bil'am came along and said, Matovu ohalecha Yaakov mishkenotecha Yisrael. He talks about the Ohel and he talks about the Mishkan. Bil'am the prophet saw there's a connection between them. He said these two institutions, Ohel Yaakov and Mishkenotecha Yisrael, they're actually the same. One is where the Jewish family lives and one is where God lives, but they actually have the same consequence. But I make an observation. Which institution was Bil'am more impressed with? How do you know? Hazako Baruch, Hazaka Berucha. Your observation is absolutely correct. First he praises the Ohel, then he praises the Mishkan. Based on the Ramban, I understand it. Because he understood that the Jewish home of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, that was the primary place of the resting of Shekhinah. The Mishkan was only secondary. So therefore, clearly there is a connection between the two. Once we've established this, now I'd like to say the Hiddush. The first part of this Dirash was just to establish there's a connection. If you have a Jewish home, if you're married, this should give you a great sense of responsibility. The husband and a wife are actually ministering their own temple. The Jewish home is a sanctuary. Today, unfortunately, the Jewish home is being assaulted by all sorts of foreign culture that enters the Jewish home. It's almost what happened in the temple. When the Greeks, at one point, were in our temple, they took a hazir, they took a pig, you'll forgive me, and they brought it into the temple, and it defiled the Beit HaMikdash. Would you imagine if somebody would bring a pig, a hazir, into the Beit Knesset? It would be considered a great defilement. Well, the Jewish home has no less kiddushah. But today, unfortunately, the policy in the Jewish home is laissez-faire. There's an open door policy where anything is allowed in the Jewish home, and unfortunately it is not scrutinized. There needs to be great, great hashkaha, supervision, not only on the food in the Jewish home, but on the material, on what is allowed in a Beit Knesset, in a Bayit Yehudi. I mean, I have to assume, that certain things we would all agree don't belong in a synagogue. I would imagine if somebody would come along Bar Minan and, you know, put a picture on top of the Hechal of somebody inappropriately dressed, for example. And you'd walk in and say, what is this? Yeah, we're redecorating the Beit Ken. What? You're putting a picture over here? This, what kind of picture is this over here? Well, certainly if we would put magazines for the people to take, and we would put them on this lectern over here, and we say, please, ladies, on the way out, take a magazine. And you see, what kind of magazine is this here? This doesn't belong in a Beit Knesset. This belongs in a trash can somewhere. What kind of perverted magazine is this? Well, in a Beit Knesset, we all understand there's a standard. But we're not familiar that the Jewish home is the same status. And whatever we would not allow in a Beit Knesset, we have to be very, very concerned that we cannot let it into the Jewish home. Otherwise, the Shekhinah will not be in the Jewish home. Of course, that's probably the... I have a proof that it's the lady's responsibility more than the man. I'm not putting any pressure on anybody. But I'll tell you why. I'll tell you my proof. Well, obviously, because the man's out all day long. The man's not in the house. The house is the lady's domain. But I have a proof to this. The Gemara says that the lady is called Akeret Habayit. Akeret comes from the word Ikar. Ikar is the primary. And Bayit is the home. She's Akeret Habayit. She's the minister. She's the main manager or administrator of the Jewish home. The Hakamim tell us that the Ohel is a synonym to a woman. How do I know? Ohel is a woman. If somebody would call you a tent, you'd get offended. But you shouldn't get offended, because the Torah calls you a tent. When the Jewish people finished receiving the Torah at Sinai, for 3 days they were not allowed to be with their wives. They had to be purity. And then after the event was over, what does God tell the Jewish people? Shuvu lechem le'aholechem. Go back to your tents. The Gemara says, what do you mean your tents? That was a... Exactly. That was God's way of saying, go back to your wives. You can go back and you can behave now as man and wife. God didn't say, Shuvu lechem l'neshechem. Go back to your wives. L'aholechem. That means in God's dictionary, Ohel and a woman are synonymous. For good reason. Because they're the administrators. So therefore, when Bil'am comes along and says, Matovu ohalecha Yaakov, he refers to the Jewish home as the Ohel. I believe he's calling it Ohel because he's hinting that the reason why the Ohel is Tov, that responsibility lies flatly on the Mashkiach. And the Mashkiach in this case is the lady. Matovu ohalecha. It is the Jewish woman that set the standard. Well, you see a proof to what I'm saying. When did the lights go back on in Sarah's house? Not when he walked in. When Rivka walked in. When Rivka walked in, all of a sudden the lights went on, and the Shekhinah came back, and the bread started to become fresh. What do you mean? Yitzhak was there. Wasn't the first time. So you see over here that this is a primarily on the woman. But we go further. If that's the case, I just like to bring a remez. I didn't say yet the hadush that I came to say. This is all establishing first the connection. When they built the first Mishkan, I'm sure you're well aware that there was a week of preparation before they were actually able to inaugurate the Mishkan. The Mishkan was inaugurated on the first day of the month of Nisan. 7 days before, it was called the 7 days of Miluim, where Moshe would have to construct the Mishkan, take it apart, and make all sorts of preparations. The Mishkan then was inaugurated on the 8th day. As the Perashah writes, Vayhi Bayom Hashemini. Well, if that's the case, we have a remez. When we build a new Jewish home, what does our tradition say? That for the first week, we have what's called the week of Sheva Berachot. The first week of a marriage is not like any other week. There we're obligated to have special se'udot. We're obligated to make special blessings. The Hatan and Kala are limited on going to work, and they must spend time together. Why would we make a week? There's no other... It's an unofficial holiday. We have the holidays already. Pesach is 7 days. Sukkot is 7 days. Why all of a sudden we need 7 days for Hatan v'Kala? But if you understand that they're about to build a sanctuary, and there's correlations, they're building a hat mechorbot, one of the chorbot, which is the Beit HaMikdash, so then you need the 7 days. So the 7 days correspond to 7 days of Miluim. Oh. if this is true, I'd like to tell you a story that happened in Jerusalem. The story must have happened about 100 years ago. There was a rabbi of Jerusalem. His name was Rabbi Shmuel Salant. He was one of the Gedolei Ador. Rabbi Shmuel Salant was getting old. His eyes started to fail him. And he needed somebody to take over his position. He held the highest position in Jerusalem. At the time, there was a rabbi living in Lita. Lita is Lithuania. The rabbi's name was the Aderet. That was the acronym of his name, Aderet. Eliyahu David Rabinovich Teumim. This rabbi called the Aderet was the rabbi of a city called Panovich. Rav Shmuel Salant knew that this rabbi Aderet was great. He authored 120 sefarim. We have most of them. Anyway, he called on him to come from Lithuania, to come to Yerushalayim. You can imagine what a difficult and long trip that would be. The Aderet accepted it. And he came to Yerushalayim. On the day that he came to Yerushalayim, Shmuel Salant went out to greet him, which was a big thing, that he's the chief and he's coming to greet this new rabbi that gives him great credibility. But he was famous, the Aderet. Anyway, you can imagine how tired the rabbi was from the trip. Rabbi Salant told him, I know you just arrived today from a long trip, a journey, but tonight we have a wedding in Jerusalem, and you're going to officiate the wedding. He wasn't in no position to officiate a wedding. He just came, by boat, I don't know how he came. And now he has to officiate a wedding. The rabbi said, there's nothing to talk, you have to be the first one tonight. So the Aderet went. When he got there, they give him the cup of wine, as the weddings begin with the cup of wine. And he says, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, Shehakol Nehiya B'Dvaro. He makes the berachah Shehakol. Immediately, he caught himself. He takes the wine again, and he looks at the Hatam V'Kadan, and he says, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, Bore Peri HaGefen. And the wedding finished. Of course, the students were shocked. Not that he made Shakon Yavid Baro, because that's a mistake. People make mistakes. Especially the rabbi came all the way from Panovich that day to Eretz Yisrael. His mind maybe wasn't settled. Sometimes you can make a mistake. Human beings make mistakes. That wasn't the issue. The issue was that he made a halachic mistake. What was the halachic mistake? The halacha says that if you made shehakol on grape juice or wine, it counts. You shouldn't make shehakol on it. But if you did, okay, if you did, we say bidi'avad. Bidi'avad means if you did it already, it counts. Imagine, if somebody would take a glass of wine, shehakol yad baro, we tell them, okay, drink. What are you going to do? Kapara. You made the wrong beracha. It counts. It's not preferable. If somebody comes along and says, my custom is to make shakol on wine. I tell, why? You're a fool. That's the wrong beracha. No, I heard. What do you mean you heard? If you made a mistake, it counts. Doesn't mean it's the proper way. Fine. So they went to the Aderet and they said, Hakam, the fact that you made a mistake and said shakol, we understand. But why did you make Geffen again? Seemingly that's a beracha lebatala. They thought maybe they caught the new rabbi. And if they caught him, they caught him in a big blunder. Such a blunder, he's not worthy to be the rabbi of Jerusalem. This is, every child knows this halacha. And you can't give an excuse. Even the fact that you're traveling, the rabbi cannot forget the basic halakha that we learned in second grade. Alakol imamar she'akol yatza. At that point, the Aderet showed his strength. And Arav Te'umim turns to the students there and he says, there's a reason I did what I did. And he goes on to explain. He says, at a wedding, we make two blessings. Borei Pri HaGefen. And then, Asher Kedeshanu B'Metzotav V'Sivanu Al Arayot. Baruch Ata Hashem Mekadesh Amo Yisrael Al Yedei Chupa V'Kedushin. Harambam says, it's a mitzvah to get married. When a young man gets married, he has to know he's fulfilling a mitzvah from the Torah to get married. That's why we make a blessing, Asher Kedeshanu V'Mitzvotav V'Sivanu. It's a mitzvah to light Friday night candles. Don't you make a blessing before you light, Asher Kedeshanu V'Mitzvotav V'Sivanu. It's a mitzvah to put on tefillin. We say, Asher Kedeshanu V'Mitzvotav V'Sivanu. It's a mitzvah to get married. So we say, Asher Kedeshanu V'Mitzvotav V'Sivanu. Es Ta'aderet. So then why doesn't the Hatan make the Berakha himself? He's the one that's getting married, not the rabbi. It's a good question. I mean, when I put on tefillin in the morning, I make the blessing. I don't tell the rabbi, Berakha, will you make the blessing for me? When you light Friday night candles, you call the Rebbetzin to come over to make the blessing for you? Well, you make the blessing yourself. You make the blessing yourself. So why at a wedding do they give this blessing to the rabbi? You're going to say, oh, so the rabbi can make parnasa. They gave him a job. So he can make a few bucks. So they gave him a job to make the blessing. No, that's not the reason. The halakha writes that in truth, in the olden days, the hatan would make the blessings. If you went to a wedding, 500 years ago, you'd see the wedding would begin with the hatan would take a kos. He would say, borei pri HaGefen. Then he'd look at his bride, and he'd say, Asher Kedeshanu V'Mitzvotav V'Sivanu Al Mitzvot, getting married. And then he would take a ring. You didn't need a rabbi to be Misader Kedushin. The Hatan himself did everything. What changed? I'll tell you what changed, he said. And the Halakha says, started to come Hatanim that didn't know how to make the blessings. Now all of a sudden they bring a Hatan B'Chavot. Make the beracha. Okay, Geffen, he knows. What if it's Geffen? Okay, now make the second beracha. What's the second beracha? No, Ashikud Hashem says, "Alarayot, asalarosot, v'tina surularav." This is a long beracha. Not every Hatan knows how to read. All of a sudden, he gets up, he starts to fumble, he starts to make mistakes, and all of a sudden, everybody says, "Oh, look at this, I'm an honest guy." And then the bride says, "What kind of guy am I marrying over here? He doesn't even know how to make a beracha." So now the Hatanim start to get embarrassed if they're going to be told to make, and guess what? Even if somebody knows how to make a beracha, but not everybody is outgoing, you take the smartest guy in front of 500 guests, make a beracha, he starts to shake. He gets nervous. So therefore the rabbi said, you know what? So we don't embarrass Hatanim anymore. We're going to let the rabbi be the agent of the Hatan. We don't officiate weddings, but I have the zechut to do that. What do I tell the Hatan before I make the blessings? I'm making the blessings for you. Really, you're supposed to make the blessings. So don't say Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo. Just listen to the beracha and make, I'm your agent. Finished. So he comes along and says, a big hadush. He says, when do we say, if you make she'akol niyav et baro on a cup of wine, it's okay. That's if you're making it for yourself. But if you're making it for somebody else, it doesn't count. He says, in this case over here, I'm not making the beracha borei pri HaGefen for myself. I'm making the beracha for the hatam. What's the difference? So he said, when the Hatan appoints me an agent, he appoints me an agent to do the mitzvah the proper way. He doesn't want me to do the mitzvah secondary. When I appoint you to be an agent for me, go do this, I want you to execute it properly. You come back and say, I did it, but I did it second best. You're not my agent. I didn't appoint you to do second best. I only appointed you to do it right. And if you don't do it right, you're not my agent. So he said, when I make shakol yared baro, that's not doing it correct. 100% correct. Therefore, there's no connection between me and the Hatan anymore. The agent is broken. Now I have to do it again. The Hatan can say, Rabbi, I brought you to do my wedding the right way, not the wrong way. But I say, it's not wrong. For me, it's wrong. I don't want my wedding to be a shakol yared baro wedding. I want my wedding to be a buna b'nei gever wedding. Who asked you to come along and do shakol yared baro? But the law is, if you say shakol, it counts for you. But you cannot count it for me. The agent is broken. What a hadush of that I did it. Wow. This and by the way, this is something that he thinks of on the spot, which is when he said shakol yared baro, he had to go through this whole process of thought. Hold it. I'm an agent. He wouldn't want me to make the shakol. Therefore, if I don't make a new gift and the agent is broken, therefore I cannot marry him. So therefore he made it again. That's the story. I asked the following question based on the adedit. Ladies, I know this is not a halakha class, but you're going to learn something from it. If you could just follow the trend of thought. This is something we would say in the yeshiva. But I'll take a chance to say it over here in front of Nashim Hachmaniyot, the wise woman. Based on this, what I just taught you from the Adirit, what would you say in the following case? I come home on Motzei Shabbat, and I'm making Havdalah for my family. My wife is there, my children are there, my sons are there, everybody's sitting at the table. Daddy, make Havdalah for us. My pleasure. One Havdalah for the whole family. Okay, get the wine, get the candle, get the besamim. They put it over in front of me. I take the yain. I say, okay, I'm your agent. Yes, of course. Don't say Baruch Baruch Shemo. Baruch Ata Hashem Shakol Niyavet Baro. Oh. What would you say according to the Adirit?
If you're including
the Oh, so based on the rule we just learned, it shouldn't be good. Because agent. I'm making it for them.
Yes,
I'm making it for them. They say, hey, well, we want to come to law the right way. But the rabbi only said his law by a marriage. He didn't say it by any other case. By Havdalah, if the guy made shakol, it counts. If by kiddush, I'm saying kiddush for the congregation, I'm your agent, I said shakol, it counts. But by a wedding, it doesn't count. What's the difference? Now you have to put on the hakam hat. Now you have to use your sevara. I'll tell you the difference. There's a big difference. A big difference. There was a miracle that took place in the Beit HaMikdash thousands of years ago. The Greeks came into the temple. The Greeks came into the temple and they defiled the temple. The temple was out of service. All of a sudden, the Hashmonaim came and they pushed back the Greeks and they recaptured the temple. But the temple wasn't used for many months. So they needed to re-sanctify it. That's why we call the holiday Hanukkah. Hanukkah means the re-sanctification. Lahanech. Hinuch means to re-inaugurate. Yes? Well, anyway, when they got there, everything was defiled. Everything was impure. And they had to light the menorah. There's no oil, and even if there was oil, it was all impure. All of a sudden, you know the story, I'd have to tell you the story of Hanukkah. It's right around the corner, Hanukkah. All of a sudden, they're looking, they're making a search, they find a little pak shemen. And it lasted for... And everybody says, oh, thank God they found this oil. The oil that was with a seal of the Kohen Gadol. See, they knew it was pure. And everybody gets excited. Oh, thank God. What would he have done if we didn't find this oil? Hazakah Berucha. You know what the rabbi called Bnei Yoshua says? Bnei Yoshua says, the law is that if the people are all impure, you're allowed to light with impure oil. That's called Tum'ah Hutra B'Sibur. It's a famous law. The law is, if the majority of the people are impure, then we waive the law. You can do whatever you want. So you didn't need this oil. So what was this big miracle that we make in Hanukkah? Oh, thank God we found Pak Shemen. As if everybody thinks, wow, it's good we found the Pak Shemen. Because if we didn't, there'd be no Hanukkah. Guess what? There would be. But let's talk another scenario. Let's say they went into the Beit HaMikdash. They took the ned. They're looking for Bidikat Hametz. They're looking for the oil. The Kohen says, we cannot find any oil. What would they have done? They would still have lit the menorah. Because the law is you're allowed to light the menorah if the majority of the people are tameh. You understand the law now? So what's the big deal? That's the question of Bnei Yoshua. Comes a rabbi called the Kutzker Rebbe and he gives one of the most incredible answers to this question. You know what his answer is? It's based on the principle. Sometimes you can rely on just getting by. Sometimes you're allowed to rely on halachic loopholes. It's true. We'll call it a halachic leniency. Rabbi, does it count? Okay, it counts. It's okay. It's okay. Sometimes you're allowed to rely on it. However, when you're starting something from the beginning, at its inception, the foundation always must be leka tehila. It must be done without any compromise, without any deficiency. When you're starting something from scratch, there's no room for any iota of imperfection. I'll take an example. If we're building a building, well, it's true. Let's say we get to the floor, the 72nd floor. And one of the windows on the 72nd floor, they didn't put it in perfectly. So, okay, that's okay. Is it dangerous? It's not dangerous. Would you rather put it in better? We would rather, but you could leave it. The building is, it'll get its C of O. But there's one area of the building that they don't allow you to make even the smallest mistake. And where is that? Foundation. If they tell you, listen, we built the foundation, it's passing. Passing? Yeah, you got 65. No, 65. Can't get 65 in a foundation. The builder will say, take the whole foundation apart and build it again until it's 100%. Why? Because that's the yesod. The foundation you cannot have a compromise on. You can compromise any other part of the building, but not its foundation. So the Kutzker Rebbe said, in Judaism, anytime you're starting a foundation, there mustn't be any compromise. It must be halachically perfect. So he says, it is true that if the majority of the congregation is impure, you could use impure oil. When is that? When the temple is functioning. When the temple is having normal function, and that happens to happen, it's okay. But in this case of Hanukkah, we were re-inaugurating the temple. This was not a continuation of the service. This was the beginning of the service. The temple was out of order. When the Hasmonaim came back to light the menorah, they were starting it from scratch. When you're starting it from scratch, you cannot rely on leniencies. Then already it must be done perfect. So they needed pure oil. You understand the yesod of the Kutzker Rebbe? There's a difference between Hanukkah to Mizbeach and the continuation of the Mizbeach. Hanukkah is the groundbreaking. Groundbreaking, you cannot make any mistakes. Based on that Kutzker Rebbe, I say the following. There's a difference between Havdalah and a wedding. If I come to my family and they're making Havdalah, and I say Shakol Yavvaro, they say, okay, daddy, you made a mistake, it's okay, it's only Havdalah. Shakol counts? Yeah. You're still our agent. It doesn't bother us. But a wedding is a foundation. The wedding is the beginning. The beginning of you're starting a new chapter. The wedding is not a continuation of an event. When a person now comes to build his new home, you're starting something now from scratch. When you're starting from something from scratch, the Hatan says, I don't want to start the foundation of my marriage that I passed with a Shakol Niyabit Baro. I'm not interested in a B'di'avad. I'm interested in the Katayda. Therefore, specifically at a wedding, the Aderet said, there is no room for a mistake. Therefore, he made the Barakah again. And that's the connection. When Bil'am said, Matovu ohalecha Yaakov, Mishkenotecha Yisrael, what he meant to say possibly is that just like when you're making the Mishkan, and when you're starting the Mishkan, it must be done perfect. There's no room for legal loopholes and leniencies. Ohel Yaakov is the same thing. The Ohel Yaakov is no less. And therefore, the Jewish home must be built from its inception without any compromises and any leniencies. If the foundation of a Jewish home is compromised, then God forbid, you cannot build on top of a foundation that is faulty. If that's the case, it might explain another fascinating law. And I'm sure you've heard of it. They say that on the day that a young man, young lady, gets married, all their sins are forgiven. Hatan mohalim lo al kol avonotav, which is an amazing thing. We know that happens on Yom Kippur, let's say. But last Sunday night was not Kippur. Or tonight is not Kippur. But if there's a Hatan that's getting married tonight, he gets a gift from God. All the sins that he ever committed, from when he was, I guess, Bar Mitzvah until the present, God gives him a wedding gift. What's the wedding gift? Delete. Finished. How can it be? What is it just because, because he's getting married, that's a kapara, you mean? That's his punishment? That's a kapara. I want to understand why. What's the reason? I'm not saying that that's the reason. I want to understand. What is the reason? Hazaka Birukawa. You're listening good. The answer is. Before we get to the problems, the answer is. Ahatan and Kala starting their marriage now. They cannot start their marriage now with a history. If they're to come into their marriage with all their past and all their averot and all that, how are you starting now with Jewish home with all this baggage that they come into the marriage? So Borei Olam says, I'm going to give you a gift. I'm not giving you a $50 bond. I'm giving you something more valuable. Today, you're born again. You start again today from scratch. Oh, so therefore when they come into the wedding, they come into their footsteps, or the threshold of their home on that day, finish, they're all tzaddikim. God gives you a chance to reset, to start again. But specifically because if it would be done any other way, the foundation would be, Chas v'Shalom, compromised. So therefore, we see over here, ladies, a great lesson. The Jewish home is something that is very, very integral to our survival. We've lived without a temple for thousands of years. What has taken the place of that temple for thousands of years is the Bayit Yehudi, is the Jewish home. I think it would be a great zechut for the new couple that we talked about this today, that would give us an opportunity to reflect on our own Jewish homes. We say that the Jewish home should be built ne'eman. It's called the ne'eman, a bayit ne'eman. Ne'eman means loyal. Loyal means loyal to the traditions, loyal to the rules that bring Shekhinah into a Jewish home. And therefore, our tradition says, when they built the Mishkan, it says, Ve'asuli Mikdash V'shachanti. Well, I have a remez now. What does a man say when he marries a lady? Not, will you marry me? That's the Goyim say, will you marry me? We don't believe in that tradition. The man says to the bride, Hare at Mikudeshet. Exactly the same words as when they built the tabernacle. Ba'asuli mikdash. When a man gets married, he understands that this is a moment over here as well as mikudash. And after the husband gives the ring, the rabbi says, mikudeshet besimantov, there's a kiddushin here, there's a kiddush. It's ba'asuli mikdash. And the same result is v'shachanti. That the Shekhinah comes down, like it says, ish v'isha shezachu Shekhinah b'nehem. No different than the, not no different, greater even than the presence of the Shekhinah that was in the times of the Beit HaMikdash. And that's what Bil'am meant when he said, Matovu alecha Yaakov mishkenoteka Yisrael. Yeah, Bil'am, in his blind prophetic eye, he saw a big secret. He said, the secret of Jewish survival for the future is to preserve the Jewish home. And as long as the Jewish home is preserved, then Am Yisrael can exist even without a temple. But rest assured, when the temple is built, those Jewish homes are going to be uprooted again and brought with the temple into Eretz Yisrael. That's Bayit Ne'eman, means a trusted, loyal home. That's Binyan Ade'ad, like we say at the wedding. Binyan Ade'ad means an eternal home. It's possible in Judaism that a house can be eternal if it's built on Adnei HaTorah. And that's what it means. Kol HaMesameach Hatan, Ki'ilu Bana Ahat Mechorbot. One of the Chorbot, the one, the Binyan Beit HaMikdash, Yibaneh B'merav Yamenu.